The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
How you doing? Happy Tuesday. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Only true democracy and talk. You can see me today, those of you watching here via Twitter on Periscope, and you can also see my great guest who we've had many times before. It's so neat. Everybody's like, you know, casual baseball caps, t-shirts or whatever. Scott Paul is joining us today, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. They're a partnership established by some of America's leading manufacturers and the United Steelworkers Union. And for over a decade, Scott and AAM have worked to make American manufacturing a top of mind issue for voters and our national leaders, and they've done it through effective advocacy, innovative research, and a savvy PR strategy. More than a pleasure to have on the show Scott Paul. Hey, Scott, happy Tuesday. Thank you for joining us, and good to see you. Although, Marky Mark, you got to let me see him. He does this little thing when we're on air so that I can see you usually in the box. And good to be able to see you as well as hear you today. Thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hey Leslie, it is great to see you as well as to be part of the show today. Thank you.
There's so much that we need to talk about. First up, you have a great piece, an op-ed in the New York Times. I want to say congrats. It is not easy to get published in the New York Times. This is a great piece entitled "Why Can't America Make Enough Masks or Ventilators?" And it's an excellent question, and it's a question a lot of people are asking. I mean, why can't we, a leader in technology, a leader in medicine, somebody, a leader in freedom and a nation that people look to for answers and progress? And how many times do people come to us and say, hey, bail us out? And it seems like we can't even help ourselves and bail each other out, state by state, hospital by hospital, in this coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. The president, you wrote, has promoted himself as a champion of American manufacturing, but now he avoids addressing its shortcomings. Your piece is so good, but I want people to read it. And, you know, we're going to post it. And I think we already have, and we'll post it again. You write this piece, "Why Can't America Make Enough Masks or Ventilators?" First off, talk about the companies out there, because we have heard, you know, across the board, people that made sneakers or people that made handbags, people that made scarves are really now reinventing themselves because they're trying to make this PPE equipment. We are desperate for the equipment. It's needed for the medical professionals to treat the patients with coronavirus. It's also necessary for we, the people who aren't in healthcare, as things start to open, because masks are going to be necessary in many of the states as they open when we go in to do our normal shopping and come into contact with each other, or if our kids go back to school or to camp. So right now, I just want to say hats off to American manufacturers. They're rising to meet this pandemic. And you talk about they're doing it with little or no coordination from the federal government. Can you speak to that? Why the companies have had to do this? And why on earth they're having so little or no help from the federal government?
Yeah, Leslie, there's a lot to unpack there, and I'm glad you set it up that way, because, you know, first let's look at the good news, and that is that a lot of manufacturers, small mid-sized manufacturers, who faced this just as you and I did, and had stay-at-home orders and had orders drop off, and just their world was radically changed almost overnight. They, in a very short amount of time, were able to figure out how to contribute to be part of the solution. And if they made something plastic, how do I make a face mask? If they made something out of cloth, How do I make a protective respirator? If they made complex machinery, how do I make a ventilator? And this is the best part of America. I think this is what I think that is really inspiring, is that you had not dozens, not hundreds, but in fact, Leslie, thousands of companies all across America step up and want to contribute to this. I was just talking to some manufacturers in Ohio, and when their governor, Mike DeWine, put out the call for this, and when their hospitals like the Cleveland Clinic said, hey, we need some help, within a week, there were 1,200 manufacturers in Ohio who said, what can I do to help? And it just gives me chills thinking about that, because that is truly what our nation is about. And they're really stepping up, and they are preventing a lot of these shortages that we all had feared. And they're tackling the some of the testing supplies as well. But the sad part of the story is, how did this all happen? And I think that's the thing that is so deeply frustrating. Obviously, you can't precisely predict when a pandemic is going to occur. You can certainly be prepared. And there's a number of ways to be prepared. You can have a stockpile. You can have a plan. It's clear we didn't really have a lot of either of that. But the other thing that you can have is a domestic manufacturing base that is resilient and that is able to respond, and that you have this domestic capacity. But the fact is, and I think this is a piece of data that just blew my mind when I heard it, that of the essentially, billion face masks or so, the respirators that we'll need in our country, because the hospitals, they can only use them a certain amount, we had 1% of those on hand that we were able to make in the United States. And there's a lot of reasons. Offshoring, tax policies, greed, a fact that there's a lot of middlemen in the medical supply business that act like Walmart, where they search out these cheap goods. So the manufacturers have no choice but to go to China, and then they distribute them to all these hospital systems. And so the system was just not designed for resilience or for domestic production. And as this pandemic has shown so far, that was an enormous mistake. It made us completely dependent on this bootstrapping and also on other countries. And if China is dealing with its own pandemic, or if it sees some strategic advantage by taking care of its own first rather than sharing with the rest of the world, it's obviously going to do that. And that's sort of what happened here. And so it's not that we were so much caught off guard, like obviously we didn't know the date this was going to happen, but our system was not built for this type of resilience, and it eroded over a couple of decades. And look, I don't expect Donald Trump or any other president to set it right, but the fact that we had a series of leaders, including Donald Trump, who let this manufacturing go offshore, that was an enormous, enormous mistake.
And we're now seeing what an enormous mistake it was. And so sadly, millions of lives being lost globally. You mentioned like Walmart and the cheaper quality of goods. We've talked about these three T-shirts for $10 before. I was reading an article this morning, Scott, that they believe that the ventilators purchased from China were actually faulty and killing the patients. And it's interesting because a couple of weeks ago, there was also a report, and Governor Cuomo had actually touched upon it very lightly, that everybody who was on a ventilator in New York died. Mm-hmm. And now they're taking people off ventilators. And I don't think it's the ventilators. I think it's where they got the ventilators, or the type of ventilators. So this speaks to exactly what you're talking about, that we put ourselves in a bind, and when, t-shirts are one thing, ventilators are very different. And I'm wondering how many lives might not have been lost had they had a good, strong American-made ventilator. I want you to speak to that. But I also want you to talk about this, because you just touched upon our country not being able to meet the immediate need for critical medical supplies, for PPE, personal protective equipment, in the face of a crisis. They're now hospitalizing some children in New York that have something similar to coronavirus, but different. They're now talking about a mutation of coronavirus overseas that they're looking at in labs that could be far worse than COVID-19. And they're also looking at a potential second wave of coronavirus. So can you speak to this? I mean, you know, we can look at what we've learned, but right now, Mark says we have to break. We're going to break. When we come back, I want you to think about this, because I know you've got, you know, some answers for this, definitely. What do we need to do where we're at to handle where we are, but also not get caught again as to where we were at the beginning of this with these mutations or second waves coming back? We're going to talk with Scott Paul Moore right after this. Don't go away. And like I said, Scott is president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. I want you to check out the website during the break, AmericanManufacturing.org. Also follow them on Twitter at Keep It Made in USA. We're going to talk about that too. A lot of us want to help those mom and pop and American made companies now and going forward. And also follow Scott at Scott Paul AAM on Instagram. Follow at American Manufacturing and on Facebook, facebook.com/American Manufacturing. Back with Scott, back with you right after this. I'm Leslie Marshall. Don't go away.
Follow Leslie on Twitter. Just go to www.twitter.com/Leslie Marshall. And we'll be sure to share your tweets.
We are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome, welcome back. Only True Democracy and Talk. Scott Paul is with us, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Scott, thank you for holding welcome back. Marky Mark, if you can give me him visually back, I would appreciate that. We are talking about why America can't seem to have enough masks or ventilators, or even make enough masks or ventilators. Scott, thank you for holding welcome back. I want to give a shout out to some of the companies that are on this very long list of manufacturing companies that have just, you know, flipped so quickly to help make PPE and other supplies that are needed. Mohawk Fine Papers, American Giant. Mohawk Fine Papers, by the way, United Steelworkers employees there for making and shifting their products to medical gown and mask production. American Giant, another garment manufacturer, scaling up the production of medical grade mask. Budweiser and Ford churning out hand sanitizers as well as ventilators. You know, Scott, you write, these are inspiring, but they're not enough. And I had asked you a question for the before the break about what we do, because we do possibly have COVID-19 part two or right. A mutation of that coming our way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, we must be prepared. The good news again, Leslie, I'm going to do, I think, almost a good news, bad news in every segment here. So the good news is that there are a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle who have awakened in Washington to this issue. And, you know, Governor Cuomo has talked about this. Why should we be depending on China for all of this? You know, there's been Republicans who have essentially said the same thing. Marco Rubio basically cut and pasted my op-ed and took it as his own about a week later in the New York Times. He's in a position to do something about it, so I don't mind at all. In fact, I think it's awesome. But you're right. We need desperately to be able to make a couple of things here. I mean, more broadly, I favor it for all of manufacturing, but specifically in this crisis, we obviously need PPEs. We need the active pharmaceutical ingredients in a lot of the medicines. If we're going to make a vaccine, I mean, how is that distributed globally? We're going to need billions of doses. And if we don't have the capacity to make the vaccine here in the United States, it is going to put us down the list, I'm afraid. So we have to have that capacity as well, or to churn out enough ventilators. And the things standing in the way are, again, the way the system is structured. The middlemen who buy up the supplies and then distribute them to the hospitals, they've got to be reformed, because they're, again, they're just like Walmart. It's like, let's squeeze the suppliers. We'll capture the products. We'll give the hospitals some cheap stuff, but we're going to make a lot of money. And for a good like healthcare, I don't think that works particularly well when you're talking about lives that you need to save. And then more broadly, we need to end tax incentives that are shipping those jobs overseas. Obviously, we still don't have things right with China after, you know, Donald Trump has been at this for a couple of years. But it is not altered our dependence in any way on those types of goods coming from China. So we need a real plan. We need real reform there instead of just trading blame back and forth about, did they start it? You know, did they do enough? I mean, that's kind of a, that's almost an academic question at this point. Mm-hmm. The thing that we need to do is, like, we definitely need to be less dependent on goods that are coming from China. And these manufacturers who have made so much money on healthcare, we need to expect them to manufacture in the United States of America, especially those that are getting assistance now in this crisis. I mean, taxpayers, we eventually are going to be on the hook for these trillions of dollars that are going out the door. And believe me, our economy desperately needs it. But we should expect something in return from these companies. They need to bring that work back to the United States and put us back to work.
Very well said. We're behind the curve when it comes to policy making. We have been, and we certainly are. And this is playing out because we've been behind the curve with regard to policy, right?
Yeah, totally. We've been reacting. We've been saying, like, well, we're going to let a philosophy govern our point of view, which is about free markets. You know, we don't want, we don't want national health care. We don't want to push back against free trade too much. And we want to make sure that our tax cut or that our corporations that are their hands aren't tied if we're giving them assistance or tax cuts. Well, that has to change. And so, I think that there's an awakening in Washington to this, but I think it's going to take way more political will on the part of Republicans, Democrats, and obviously the administration as well. I mean, it is not managed particularly well through this crisis at all. I mean, we've managed to get where we are kind of despite of it and not because of it. And we need to have it look a little bit more into the future to see what we can do better to prepare the next time, because all we get now are kind of excuses, blame, and things are great. And we all know that's not the case. And so we need to wise up.
We are coming up on a break. I want to talk a little more about this, but there's so many other things we need to cover, and time just flies when you're here. I mean, half of the show is over. I want to talk about that diverse supply chain, because you quoted in your piece someone at CNBC who said, quote, in times of crisis, a diverse supply chain is more important than ever. I want to briefly touch upon that and move on to some other things within this whole issue under the umbrella of manufacturing. And I want you to add your name, everyone watching and listening, to AAM's message to President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence that it's time to rebuild America. This is easy, folks. Go to tinyurl.com/rebuildamericaaction to add your name. That's go to tinyurl.com/rebuildamericaaction to add your name. We're going to be having this on all of my sites, LinkedIn, Facebook, the website, Twitter. So if you didn't get that now, you can find it then. Scott Paul is my guest. Back with him, back with you, right after this. We are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, is our guest. Why don't we take a listen to this, and we'll continue talking to Scott. Take a listen.
How did we get to this place in this country that we have to buy all our supplies from China?
When the coronavirus struck, the U.S. was not ready.
Hospitals struggling with their limited supplies of masks and equipment.
Nurses are literally begging for protective equipment.
We haven't had enough of these testing kits. Unfortunately, the supply chain around the world has been broken.
It never should have been like this. History has shown that Americans are always willing to help in a crisis. When the shortages began, many U.S. manufacturers answered the call. They improvised, bootstrapped, retooled. Factory workers put their own health on the line to deliver supplies to America's hospitals. But it has been a huge challenge, and one America should have seen coming. Some corporations spent the past several decades sending jobs and production to countries like China, turning a blind eye to worker exploitation, lax pollution controls, and massive government subsidies. These companies made huge profits even as factory workers in America suffered. This was no accident. Leaders of both parties put into place policies that helped ship these jobs overseas. Americans were told this would be beneficial. Stuff would be cheaper. We were promised that we'd still be able to access everything we needed in a crisis. Then the crisis hit, and the U.S. couldn't get what it needed right away. Polls show that Americans now want to reverse these decades of bad policy and rebuild our supply chains. Here's how we do it. First, we must ramp up our own production of essential products and medical goods. Second, Buy America preferences ensure our tax dollars are spent on made in America goods, not sent overseas. Next, policymakers should insist that corporations receiving relief packages from Washington bring any offshore jobs back home. Importers should pay tariffs on time, and trade enforcement should increase. Moreover, we must continue to hold China and other countries accountable for trade violations. Finally, a major investment in America's infrastructure will create new jobs and rebuild supply chains while also fulfilling a critical need. The coronavirus has been devastating, made all the worse because the United States was ill-prepared. We might not be able to stop the next virus or crisis, but we can make sure we have the ability to make what we need to deal with it, saving lives and building a better future for us all.
Very well done, excellent, and very well said, and quite frankly, a lot of common sense there. Scott Paul is our guest, as I've mentioned. He is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, the AAM. Scott, thank you for holding. Welcome back. Before we move on to some other issues, I just wanted you briefly to speak about that diverse supply chain that I had asked you about before the break. And, you know, you mentioned it in your piece. If you could speak to that and also jump on what we just heard in that great piece of audio.
Sure, because, you know, one thing, and I don't want to make it sound like I believe there should be a literal or figurative wall around America and that we should do everything here. I mean, that's impossible, right? We need to have global trade. But that doesn't mean it. It goes all the way the other way. And we've had a couple of data points along the way. I mean, Leslie, you probably remember, you know, years ago, the Fukushima disaster in Japan.
Yes.
And it was tragic on a human scale. It was tragic on an economic scale. And a number of goods producers noticed that, you know, the parts shipments were getting delayed from Japan and it was causing them problems and they should think about diversifying their supply chains. And then that died down and that kind of went away. So here we are again. And it's not just in the medical supply chain, but there's a lot of things that have been disrupted by the pandemic, the coronavirus. And what I think is a good rule of thumb is something I call resilience. We need to have resilient supply chains in the United States that would be capable of withstanding something where if we were for some reason cut off from China or if there's a natural disaster or something like that, that we wouldn't be left hanging out to dry. And let me just get to another issue just real quick. Like, for instance, if there was some cyber attack on our electrical grid and it wiped it out, which I know sounds like science fiction, but look, so did this before
right.
it happened.
Right. There are actually movies where there was a virus that just wiped other people out and people are watching them now, you know, on Netflix.
Right.
Who knew it wasn't that crazy an idea?
Yeah, but with our electrical grid, I mean, we know there have been cyber attacks on various power authorities. You know, if a non-state actor like a terrorist organization or a hostile government wanted to do that and we were able to pull it off, we would need to rebuild electrical transformers. There's a type of steel that you need to do that called grain-oriented electrical steel. And there's exactly one place that makes that in the United States of America, which would not be enough. You know, to get us back online, we need more of that capacity. But so much of it has been offshored because of the greed, because of the trade policies, because of Wall Street, because of philosophy. And we have to understand that. Look, it's great being philosophical, but we also need to be practical. We need to be realistic. And this isn't about, you know, bashing China or bashing other people. This is about having the ability to both make sure that our country is safe and healthy. And I think this is a really important thing as well, Leslie. We want to be in a position in the United States of America to be able to help other countries. Like if they are in a time of crisis themselves, we want to be able to provide that aid, whether it's PPEs or life-saving medicine or ideas or technology or any sort of thing like that. And we are not in that position right now. I mean, we are a donor country. Right. For all of this. And that is just not right. And that's something that doesn't sit right, I think, with most Americans. I mean, we should be that beacon that where we extend our values and our aid all around. And right now, that's simply not the case.
When you look at Maryland, for example, and the mayor of Baltimore's wife, who happens to be Korean, getting ventilators and PPE from South Korea, you sit there and you go, wait a minute. People usually come to us for that stuff. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about tariffs. And let's talk about the Trump administration announcing a 90-day deferment on tariff payments and other fees paid by importers. Many people say this is a disastrous plan. I know that you have written it's a troublesome plan. Why is the Trump administration's tariff relief plan troublesome, Scott?
Yeah, so look, on the one hand, you have a lot of businesses that have basically had to stop operations because of this. And the jobs report is going to be terrible on Friday. It's going to be catastrophic. And you've seen a lot of commerce disrupted. And so obviously the response to Congress has been so far has been, you know, the loans, which could turn into grants, basically other forms of assistance, delaying filing the taxes. And so, look, I am very sympathetic to the notion that you want to defer costs whenever possible for any type of business. But here's what sits wrong about this for me. You talked about American Giant. Right. American Giant makes great hoodies. Its headquarters is in San Francisco. It has a supply chain that's in North Carolina. It is 100% American made, from the zipper to the stitches, to the cotton, to the finish, to the yarn, to the dye, 100% American made. Byard Winthrop is their CEO. Again, a great company that's really scaled and taken off. He's not going to get any break for his materials or the cost that he's paying on that. So why should his competitors, you know, retailers that are bringing in sweatshirts from China, not have to pay any sort of duties on them for 90 days? Byard is both making his sweatshirts and he's making PPEs as well. He's not going to get any break like that. But a competitor that's sourcing all of its hoodies from China, they're going to get a 90-day break on paying tariffs on any of that. And to me, that just seems kind of ridiculous. And so, like, what's in it for our domestic manufacturers, our domestic firms that decided, look, I'm going to source from the United States of America. I'm going to try to do this. And so they're actually being penalized by not importing. And that's the thing that is deeply frustrating to me.
Special treatment for importers and in the process screwing both the American worker and American manufacturers.
Yeah. I just think that there's a lot of things that you can do for business, but I don't understand why you want to do that. And then when you're doing a favor for a retailer that imports everything compared to a supplier that has like an all-American supply. And so it just seems to me that you're providing a special favor for importers here. And importers, in a lot of ways, to me, already, you know, there's no shortage of, this is an American-made t-shirt, by the way, Leslie. But what I was going to say is there's no shortage, as you or I could attest, of imported t-shirts in the United States. So do they really need a break? Yeah, I'm not so sure.
No. I want to know what because you have a great list, and I want you to talk about it, of what needs to happen. Because this is temporary, right? This deferral is temporary. You're on the phone with Donald Trump, or you're sitting there in the White House with the administration. Outline what needs to happen. First, you start with what? You talked about deferral actions not being extended at all, period. End of subject, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think that that we should collect those tariffs. I think that with respect to our supply chains, we need to have an expectation that whenever possible, that work is brought back to the United States. And again, this isn't about putting any sort of a wall up, but it's about having resilience and also having economic recovery. And I think that's very important. We should expect firms that are getting government assistance to try to bring their work back as well. Because if it's the tax dollars, if our taxpayers are paying for this, why are we paying to subsidize their operations when they're bringing stuff in from all over the world instead of producing it right here in the United States? So I think that's important. Then there's some investments that we can make. One is infrastructure. And I'm glad you mentioned that action, because rebuilding America's infrastructure would put us back to work, would create demand in those factories again, and would make our economy even more resilient and stronger in the future. And that's money, Leslie, if you borrow, those structures are going to be there for a long time, and they're going to return value for taxpayers for a generation to come. So it's an important investment to make. And then we also need to invest in our workers and in our innovation, because, I mean, a crisis like this often begets a lot of innovation. And you've seen that already, and just the way that we're communicating right now. And so the idea is to invest some public resources to harness all of that and to make sure that it's American made. So whatever that idea is, and I love the way like Mark Cuban talks about this as well. It's like, there's gonna be 10 great ideas that come out of this. Look, I want policies that are gonna make sure those are made here in the United States, and that we aren't gonna be shipping billions of them from India or China into our country. I think that is essential to our economic future.
We're going to take a break, and I want to remind you again to please add your name to AAM's message to the president and the vice president. Tell Donald Trump and Mike Pence that it is time to rebuild America. This is a perfect opportunity, folks. We're sheltering in place, and state by state and places within state by state, we're going to start venturing out, right? It may be for some in a couple of weeks. It may be in June, the end of June. Most of us by July or August, we're going to be out there. We need to support our American businesses, our American manufacturers. So please add your name to AAM's message to President Trump and Vice President Pence that it's time to rebuild America. How do you do it? It's very simple. Just go to tinyurl.com/rebuildamericaaction and add your name. Do it. Go to tinyurl.com/rebuildamericaaction to add your name. We're going to take a break. I'm going to do that right now. Join me. Okay? Join me. Go there right now and do it. We'll be back right after this.
Follow Leslie on Twitter. Just go to www.twitter.com/Leslie Marshall, and we'll be sure to share your tweets.
We are back on Leslie Marshall, and we being me and Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, the AAM. Scott, thank you for holding. Welcome back. We have so much to talk about and don't have tons of time. You talked about how troublesome the tariff relief plan of this administration, the Trump administration, is. And there's a lot to talk about with that. But because of time, I want to move to a couple of other things. Both you mentioned Marco Rubio earlier, Scott, and Governor Andrew Cuomo have said the coronavirus proves it's time to bring back critical manufacturing. And that just goes along the lines of what I just added my name to the list for during the break. I hope many others did. Quite frankly, when you have two people like Cuomo and Rubio on the same page, strange bedfellows, but at the same time, this is hope for the future and perhaps hope for manufacturing, because I think this pandemic definitely proves it's time to bring back manufacturing, if nothing else does.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the facts are right in front of us and you can't avoid it. And obviously Cuomo, you know, has to manage every day through this crisis. And so he's been on the front lines and has seen how this has impacted, his state, his big city there, New York City. And the interesting thing as well, and Cuomo doesn't strike me as being someone who goes out of his way to be overly partisan or whatever. I mean, he's just trying to keep his head down to his job. Rubio is obviously someone who has national political ambitions, who has run for president, who is very conservative in a lot of different ways. And when he says it's time for federal policy and for the government to get involved with this, that opens your eyes
as
well. Because he doesn't want he wants the government to regulate what you can do with your body, but that's about it. Otherwise, he wants the government out of your life altogether. He wants the private sector. You know, he was a free trade guy. He has completely done a 180. He's completely done a 180. And I'm not going to, judge what his motivations are. But I think that he also sees that we have a crisis. And from a foreign policy perspective, this kind of dependence makes us weaker and not stronger, and that the private sector isn't going to do this alone. And the other thing that I think is interesting is that, I think that there is this realization that Wall Street has had too much of a role in setting the policy for manufacturing in the United States. And Wall Street's happy as long as shareholders are getting paid dividends. Just this week, it's okay. All right, Caterpillar, you're laying off most of your workforce, but your shareholders are going to get dividends. And so what does Wall Street say today? They say, that's great. What in what world is that okay? I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. And so restoring some of this balance so these multinational companies feel like there is some obligation to the country that gives them an enormous market, world-class universities, a system of the rule of law, intellectual property protection, all of this. I mean, there is some obligation, and it has to go beyond paying shareholder dividends. It has to go to what do we need to have a functioning democracy, second, a functioning economy, and one that is resilient through a crisis like this. I mean, I don't expect the United States to always have the capacity to make billions of face masks, but we should at least have the capacity to do it without having to bootstrap. And we don't right now. And then we can take that to other issues as well. And so I'm hopeful, because if you have a Senator Rubio, if you have a Governor Cuomo, if you have a lot of other voices that are having this conversation, it means to me that the debate is starting to turn. The key thing is getting this over the finish line in getting Washington to act and getting this on the agenda of Joe Biden and getting it on the agenda of Donald Trump.
Very well said. And by the way, you don't just have a Democrat and a Republican supporting it. Polling shows that Americans, by and large, also support bringing back manufacturing from China. Scott, I'm sorry we didn't get to everything. We are out of time, but I want folks to once again, like I said, you just have to go to that. Where is that, Mark, on here? Go to, where are we? Here we are. Go to tinyurl.com/Rebuild America Action and add your name. It's tinyurl.com/Rebuild America Action and add your name. I did it. It's easy. Check it out now. Thank you, Scott. And thank you for being with us.